Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Of Darian Albert. The actual video footage of Chicago teen Darian Albert's murder was the catalyst for today's show. We wanted to explore what influences could cause our teens to act in such a savagely violent manner. Can we blame music, movies, and video games? Or is it more complex than that? We will take the next 120 minutes and try to examine the possible solutions to this growing problem. But first, let me begin by introducing my co-host, poet, author, and motivational speaker, Mr. A.J. Houston, as well as one of Dallas's hottest DJs and club promoters, Mr. Kundalini. Good afternoon, guys.
How y'all doing? How you doing, Kundalini? How you doing, Chip? How you doing, Carrie?
I'm good. Looks like we got a great show lined up today. It's a hot debate across the country. We have some great guests that we're going to have chime in on the subject matter. First of all, we have Mr. Johnny Muhammad. Mr. Muhammad is a mentor for Emoja, an organization that mentors young men here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Also, we're going to have Dr. Marion Mouton. He is a principal with Fort Worth ISD here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, and he's been with the Fort Worth school system since 1998. Mr. Mouton is delayed and just texted me earlier and said he will be here before the end of the show. We've also going to have Dr. Wazik Shabir, and he works with the Fort Worth Police Gang Unit, and he's currently traveling, but will touch down in our area about 3:30, and we plan to have him join us about 4 o'clock. I'd like to say at this time, welcome, Mr. Muhammad. How are you?
I'm doing well, so how are you today, and how's the listening audience?
Thank you. We're all great, hopefully. We're going to start by discussing the different influences that could possibly affect teens and cause some of the violent behavior that we've seen recently. We're going to begin by talking about the music. Is music a possible cause of some of what we see as far as our teens are concerned? We'll start with you, Mr. Muhammad.
Well, I think music might play a little role off into that because when a lot of our youth, when they listen to that, that becomes their perception, becomes their reality. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times the music does play a little role off into that. But I think, to me, I think the biggest picture is the not having the knowledge of self and no love for self. And mm-hmm. I guess when we listen to the rap music, it's really interesting because if you just listen to it and then, you know, some songs, you know, shoot this N-word, kill this N-word, and, you know, and this is how a lot of our little brothers look at themselves. And so that plays a role. And then also when it disrespects the sister the way they disrespect the sister in the music, that plays a big part in a lot of it.
I agree. I absolutely agree. We, this week, we Googled the fact that can lyrics affect your mood and behavior. And the first song that popped up was one by rapper Eminem. And some of the lyrics I thought could definitely affect an immature mind in a negative manner. AJ, do you have those lyrics in front of you?
Give me 1 second.
Because some of the words in the song, I mean, you know, somebody may say, well, you can't blame it on music. No, not totally, but you really have to wonder if I'm already in a bad place and then I listen to a song that kind of makes me feel like I can relate to it and it's saying, you know, that you know, if you're in a trouble home and your father's this and your mother's not that and, you know, you feel like this and you feel like that and why don't you do this and why don't you do that, and all of those messages are negative, I can see where a child might think that that's the thing to do. I'm not saying it's right, but I can definitely see where that could possibly happen, you know, because we reached out to Eminem via Twitter and MySpace. And said, listen, we're going to be talking about your song. We just want you to know we ain't blaming you, but because we feel like the buck ultimately stops with the parent. But at the same time, in my opinion, he has to take some responsibility for presenting a music that he knows is going to be reaching a young audience with what his lyrics are saying. I mean, so that's my take on it. AJ, if you don't have it, I do.
No, I have one because, you know, we were talking about a couple of Eminem songs.
Okay.
One I have is Not Afraid.
Okay.
And not the chorus, but the actual first verse. You know, I'm saying this, and Eminem is probably one of the more prolific rappers that talk more about his life and just the way he see it. So I think that's why a lot of people, you know, can relate to what it says. But it opens up and says, you can try to read my lyrics off this paper before I lay 'em. but you won't take the sting out of my words before I say them, because ain't no way I'm going to let you stop me from causing mayhem. When I say I'm going to do something, I do it. I don't give a damn what you think I'm doing for me, so fuck the world. Feed it beans, it's gassed up if you think you're stopping me. I'm going to be what I set out to be without a doubt, undoubtedly. And all those who look down at me, I'm tearing down your balcony. No ifs and ends, no ifs, ands, or buts. Don't try to ask him why or how can he. From Infinite down to the last Relapse album, he's still shitting. I'm sorry. He's still shitting whether he's on salary paid hourly until he bows out or he shits his bowels out of him. Whichever comes first, for the best or worst, he's married to the game like fuck you for Christmas. His gift a curse. Forget the earth, he's got the urge to pull his dick from the dirt and fuck the whole universe.
But see, those lyrics, even though they're graphic in nature, were not, in my opinion, as graphic as the song Sing for a Moment. Sing for a Moment said things like, to see him walking around with headphones blaring, alone in his own zone, cold and don't care. He's a problem child. And he goes on further down to say his thoughts are whack. He's mad, so he's talking back, talking black, brainwashed from rock and rap. His stepfather hit him, so he socked him back and broke his nose. His house is a broken home. There's no control. Just let his emotions go. So to me, lyrics like that are saying to a troubled child, oh, I can relate to what you're going through. Just let your emotions go. You know, he also says things in there, you know, about how, you know, children worship his music, you know, and how they hang on to his every word. So that says that he at some level understands how his music can affect them. In verse 3 he says, they say music can alter moods and talk to you. Well, can it load a gun for you and cock it too? So that, you know, he's to me on every level indirectly saying, I know what I do can affect you. So that's all I'm saying about music. But Kundalini, what do you think?
I still say at the same point in time where I could be taken that way, there's a picture he's painting for a certain group of people to probably understand it, no different than when the NWA came out. There was a picture they were painting because of what they were going through in their situations. To a lot of extent, unfortunately, it gets glorified, and the actual message is forsaken for the glorification and the fame. But, you know, I think we discussed it before, you know, it's only 4 minutes, you know, as far as songs. I think that was a little over 4 minutes, maybe close to five, but you can't get anybody's whole entire gist of a whole entire picture of where they're coming from with the song within listening to something for 4 or 5 minutes. And that's the unfortunate part about music. It's just not enough time. And, you know, R. Kelly is the only person I've seen that did like 8 or 9 songs to give you a whole story of being in the closet.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't see anybody doing that, like walking you through a whole story. You get one little section of it. And, you know, because even with the part about the boy that's being hit by his father, so he punches him back, and that's, you don't know if that's retaliation from being hit previously. You don't know if he was just mad and he's been acting like that. There's no background check to say, okay, well, where did it start? It's just it's like the fairy tales. Once upon a time, okay, once upon a time, when in the beginning, in the middle, was the end? Where are we in the story?
Okay, I can relate to that.
But it's still, you know, like I said, because of the misconceptions and the school systems with the lack of providing good listening comprehension lessons and reading comprehension lessons, you know, you can comprehend and get a whole nother story out of something that somebody didn't even say.
Okay. If you're on the line and have a question or a comment about our topic, press 1 or call 347-850-8390 if you're listening via the Internet. Again, once you dial the number, you must press 1. Moving on, video games. Mr. Muhammad, what role do you feel video games, the violent video games that we see where they're, I don't know, everything about the game is designed to show some act of violence. Do you think, from what you see with mentoring these youth, that the video games play a role in this at all?
Well, I think the video games, and I have to step back and go back and go to the music, too, though, because we got to really look at this thing, because especially as being black folks, music is a lot in our nature. And if we look at this, and I have to disagree with what the brother said, it don't really take a long time, because if we go to the movie theater and they can show us some subliminal commercials with just in a moment of seconds, and the next thing you know, the next thing you're saying to yourself, let me go and get a Coke and some popcorn just because of that subliminal commercial. And we have to really go back, because if we really look at this, let's listen to our Christian music. Our church music brings something up in us to tell us, hey, man, I might need to be doing this a different way. Or if I'm down and out, I can listen to certain songs that can uplift my spirit. So if I'm listening to some of this rap music, we got to really start to look at this, because a lot of our young brothers think this stuff is real. And when we look at these video games, it takes us to a whole nother level, because in our mindset, we actually think that we can do some of these things and get away with it. And it's real cold-blooded when we get the video games and I live in the project, and I'm living in the projects, and I got a video game, and I can do all these things, and it ain't no sense of coming out. This is my reality.
I agree.
If I'm listening to a rap song and it say kill a nigga, smoke a nigga, and then I'm playing it on a video game, and then when I look at my brother and I'm looking at my brother as a nigga, or I'm looking at my sister as the B word, it's really something. And it goes back to, we had an incident here in Fort Worth where the police raided a house where a young brother got shot, and they raided the dope house, and they found the 14-year-old girl in there tied up and was being molested and raped, and we don't know how long she's been in there. So all of this stuff plays a part. So we got to really start, as black folks, taking a look at ourselves and a look at things that's going on in our community, and what's causing this.
I agree with that. Someone made a point that video games are rotting humanity's collective eternal soul, and I think there really may be some truth to that, because when I Google the most violent video games, one came up by the name of Carmageddon. The objective of Carmageddon is to run people down in the most imaginatively brutal way, and it's basically ramming pedestrians into steaming piles of bloody flesh and hitting massive roadside bombs. Wow, that doesn't sound like fun to me, but obviously to kids that is. And so you can imagine the image that is going off in their head as they're doing this over and over and over again, that they, I don't know, maybe become numb to hurting someone after their mind is being programmed via this game that's a good thing to do, or it's okay to do it. There was another one called Manhunt, in which the objective of the game was that the man escapes from an insane asylum. He goes on a killing spree, and it shows throughout the game graphic killing scenes. So if he's seeing this over and over again, and especially if he's getting good at it and enjoying it, he may at some point think, maybe I can take it to another level. Maybe it doesn't just have to be in this game. Maybe I can just do this and see what it feels like here in real life. I don't know. You know, AJ, didn't you find some of the most violent games?
I'm saying there are so many, you know, just bringing up that subject. I'm saying you have Grand Theft Auto 1, 2, and 3. And let me pull this up so we can actually read exactly what it says about Grand Theft Auto 3. And I was amazed. You know, a lot of times we just look at the game and say, okay, it's all right to say it. It's just a game. But what they've said the game is about and what the game is about is, it's amazing. Because I'm putting up, okay, the official site, and I said Grand Theft Auto, I'm trying to find 3. Because I read what it said, and I'm like, man, that is gruesome, because Grand Theft Auto is a game that just, it's about you carjacking somebody. Oh, and it says where lunatics prosper. That's That's the byline.
Grand where the innocent, where, I'm sorry, where lunatics do what?
Where lunatics prosper.
Okay.
That's the in the official site. I'm trying to find exactly what. I think this is the one. Because I had it saved in my history. But it had, they have Zombieland, they have Dead Space, they have Dead Rising, they have Shadow Complex, Splinter, Virtual Fighter, Border Wars, Halo Wars. They have, you know, all the Mortal Kombat's, because Mortal Kombat, I guess, about two or three games ago, started coming with a, where you can learn the death move, where you can pull somebody's spleen out, or pull their spine out, or chop their heads off, or chop them in half, or make them blow up. But it was all these things that you could do that was like a death move, and that, I guess that was supposed to be cool, I guess.
And those were the 10 most popular?
No, there was about 25 most popular, but I'm saying as far as, you know, killing games and death games, it's according to where you Google. There are so many games. Now, you can actually play them online or download them for your computer or buy them for Xbox 360 and PlayStation and Wii. And see, you asked me about the ones my sons have. See, my sons don't have any of those. They have the fighting games, because me, myself, I do like the Mortal Kombat games, and they have the baseball and the Madden and the different basketball games, but a lot of sports games, but none of the games that with the overrated violence.
Okay. Kundalini? Do you think video games play a role in what we see in terms of the violence?
I mean, like I said before, it's definitely going to be about the comprehension syndrome. Like, I decided to pull up while y'all was looking it up. I pulled up. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Adult Swim. I believe it's on the Cartoon Network. Yeah. And you can go. Adult Swim has like shows like The Boondocks and things of that nature. That are played on there late night. There's several other shows, a lot of Japanime and things of that nature. But if you go onto their website online on AdultSwim.com, the very first subsection that they have is for video games. And it's interesting that the very first game that they have is Pole Dance Party 2, which is about, it's a game similar to Guitar Hero, but it's about pole dancing.
Okay.
You know, in other words, being a stripper.
Okay.
Another one they have is Hemp Tycoon, where you're learning how to cut and grow, you know, marijuana. They got 5 minutes to cure yourself, 1, 2, and reloaded, which is basically you have 5 minutes to try to kill yourself.
Mm.
I mean, these are, and you look at them like 5 minutes to kill yourself, reloaded has 1,580,000 plays. Hemp Tycoon has 3 million plays. The pole dancing one has it's weird to me. I guess it must have just started. It's new. It's only got 142,000. As if that's awesome. 5 minutes to kill yourself. Wedding Day has 3 million, almost 4 million plays. I mean, this is, you know, and the thing is about it with Adult Swim, they promote their video games on their shows, they in between as commercials. So it's not like they leave it up to people to just find it. They promote it for people to go looking for it.
Okay. So we all, I think, are in agreement that video games can have somewhat of a negative impact if these kids are playing these shows, I mean, these games over and over again.
Of course.
I'm in agreement.
But
I
will say this, too. Just going back real quick to the point the other gentleman was saying, I don't disagree with the music end that it doesn't have a subliminal message, but let's agree you have to be case sensitive. In the sense of the situation with Eminem, he's describing a story. In the case of someone where they're specifically stating, go do this, or I'm shooting this person, or I'm shooting that person, that's a totally different situation, because it's called a declarative statement. You're actually making the statement, this is what I'm doing, or go do this. So those two situations, you know, Eminem was describing this kid that's in this situation. What I'm saying in that instance, there's no previous story that builds up to this point. He's just describing this instance, and there's not a whole lot of room for really, you know, you have to kind of assume things. And I guarantee you, if we walked into a room and had 20 different people and just gave them this story and then asked them, how do you think it got to that point? most of them will probably have different answers based on their certain situations. Now, I guarantee if you ask those same 20 people, if you hear a song that says kill a nigga, you know, shoot this nigga, whatnot, then what does that mean to you? That's going to be a totally different situation. Because
okay.
there's no room for assumption. It's basically telling you what it is.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Center Stage on Blog Talk Radio as we discuss Stop the Violence. We're going to move on to movies and TV, and how they may affect how children perceive violence as being an acceptable way of acting out. I was saying earlier this week that the scary movies Jason and Freddy Krueger, you know, at the end of the movie it always seems like they're dying, but the next thing you know there's a sequel and they come back. So is it sending a message to the kid that who we think is the villain is really the hero, because he keeps coming back and he keeps killing and the scenes are more gory each time, but yet these movies keep selling tickets? And so that says that they have an audience and they have someone that's interested in their material. And so my question is, what role do you think movies and TV play into this whole, way that we see kids acting out now and being numb to violence?
Well, I think it started before the Freddy, Jason, and all the other movies. I think it started with the gangster movies. They found a way to write a love story for the villain. So people would fall in love with the villain, even when, I'm trying to think his name. James Cagney and all the other, you know, when they was getting ready to get shot up at the end of the movie, and it was somebody, you know, you can't take me, copper, you can't take me, and everybody was crying for the villain, even though he was getting shot up, and he was running out at the police with his machine gun blaring, and they killed him, and those were the love stories was written, so people started writing for, not just those, for, I think, Carrie. When Carrie Henn came up from the grave, everybody revitalized every character that ever died. So now nobody dies in the movie, and we will have Freddie and Jason, 87 and 97 eventually.
Okay, I can go there. Mr. Muhammad, do you think movies and TV play a role?
Well, I think the TV and the movies, and I feel what the brothers were saying, because if we go back to Touchables, we look at Kid Bugsley, and we look at the movies with even Al Capone and Scarface, and everything, and when we looked at Scarface, a minute, and every young person wanted to go and see Scarface and think that was their and we start to look, start to think, and I don't know, when we look at it, when we look at the boys in the, and we look at the minutes,
yeah,
and we look at these, this is what the talk.
Is that his phone going in and out? I'm
You're breaking up.
He's on a limb.
Have we got you on a bad reception, Mr. Muhammad, because we lost you temporarily? Are you there?
Yeah, you're breaking up. I'd really like for you to start over so everybody can hear what you're saying, because it sounded interesting from the beginning, at least what I could hear of it.
Mr. Muhammad, if you are still with us, we cannot hear you. He hung up. I think he's going to try to call back in. But I think I think movies and television play a vital role. Kundalini, what you think?
I was wanting him to speak and continue to say what he's saying, because I thought it was interesting that he picked the movie Scarface, and this is the difference to me in between music and movies, because if you talk with people about movies, you can learn a lot from how people think. I was talking with somebody about the movie Scarface, and they made an interesting point to me that I thought I should share with you guys. They were like, in the movie Scarface, everybody looks at the whole thing with, you know, Scarface, and he's this upcoming drug dealer. He's kind of like, he's basically themed as a hero for the most part. He's the one with the poster, et cetera, et cetera. But he was like, I wasn't looking at Scarface. I wanted to be Sosa. And I was like, why did you want to be Sosa? And he was like, I wanted to be Sosa because Scarface ended up messing over this guy and not doing the job, and Sosa sent 40, 50 people to his house and killed him.
Mm, true. very true.
So he was the one that ended up dying. He's like, Sosa ended up leaving. That was the boss. He's like, Scarface was nothing.
Mr. Muhammad, we've opened back up your line. I think you got cut off as you were explaining to us Scarface.
Yeah, well, and the brother, you know, but like the brother is saying, our children and our people really don't look into depth into that. But like you said, Scarface did get killed. And in the Untouchables, all of them, they was killed. At the end, they was killed, but they went out, and in their perception, they went out as heroes. And that's like we had an incident here in Fort Worth where a young brother had murdered two other young brothers, and his words in the community was, I'm going to go down, and I'm going to take out me a few police officers, and I got a few more people that I need to kill before they get me.
Ooh.
Was his words. You know, these were his words, and this ain't no movie. These were this younger brother's words, but the police were finally able to catch him before he was able to do that. But those were his words before they caught him. And he did take out two brothers, and what was so cold about it, he did it at high noon on a Saturday while other people were watching.
Wow.
And I told him, I said, y'all not understanding this, but this almost like Gunsmoke. And Mac Dillon or the OK Corral, he did it at high noon and pulled up on them and shot both of them in the broad daylight. It wasn't 12 midnight. It was 12 noon. So this is something that we have to really start looking at.
Well, why don't our youth feel anything about consequences? You know, back in the day, we would think about doing crazy things, but it was always in the back of our mind what the consequences was, so we'd move on. Why is it today that the young people don't seem to think as far as tomorrow? They don't think about consequences, jail or possibly death. It almost seems like they don't even, that's not even something that phases them. Why is that?
If you grew up without consequence and balance in your life from the beginning, it's always on the strength that, hey, I've been getting away with stuff all my life, so if it's my time, it's my time. I ain't sweating it. I'm going to do what I do. And that's how they're going.
Wow.
And you hear in a, how do we say it? The young people say it, I'm going to do me.
Mm.
You know, so and this is it, but there's no fear factor. And then what starts to happen, and we don't really pay attention to it, but I see it all the time in mentoring, it's almost like a rite of passage to be incarcerated and go do time. Because if you think about it, black folks and Hispanics, we're the only one that will throw you a party when you get out of prison.
And for you go.
You ain't been to college. You ain't been to the Iraq War. You've been to the penitentiary. But so when that brother comes home from the penitentiary, we throw him a party. So what is that showing to our younger brother? We're dealing with a situation over here right now where we had allegedly a 14-year-old murdered a 20-year-old.
Mm.
Well, the 14-year-old right now is out of jail. Well, to a lot of other young boys, they're looking at this brother. He's almost like, man, oh, man, he did it. And even if he didn't do it, he's going to wear the badge of honor around in the community like he did do it. So either somebody's going to take him out or he's going to take somebody else out. But what he showed the other little brother did, you can do it and get away with it too.
Well, how is it that he's out of jail?
Well, the reason they got him out, because he's a juvenile, he's 14, and then it's allegedly. But regardless of not, he's in the gang that had something to do with the other brother getting killed. So that for a brother like me that's doing mentoring, that right there sets me back, because now I got to work harder with the other younger brothers and let them know, say, man, this ain't the route to go. But even if the brother didn't do it, it still sets precedent in a lot of the young brothers there that he's above the law.
If you're on the line and have a question or a comment about the topic, press 1, or if you're listening via the Internet, you can call in at 347-850-8390. Again, the number to call is 347-850-8390.
I have a quick question before y'all move on. In reference to the young gentleman who got out of jail, just so I make sure that I'm clear, are you saying that the only reason why they let him go is because of how old he was?
Well, I don't think they had enough on him, but when they did get him, I don't think they had all the evidence on him that they needed, but it would have been safer for us in our community if they would have held him until they had everything with him being a juvenile. It would have been safer not only for him and his family, because we still got another family that's grieving, and I don't know all the evidence and all the facts on that, but as being a mentor and working with young brothers in the neighborhood, this don't help us all at all, because what else it sets up too, though, brother, is it shows that our lives aren't valued too much, even in a penal culture.
Well, I'm saying, is he out? Period. Like they had a case on it, or is he just out on bond waiting to go to court?
Well, see, as a juvenile, if you're 14 and under, you don't get bond. They'll give you a leg monitor if you act right for the time that you're down there, and send you on home. So if he goes in and behaves himself while they got him in juvenile, he can go home.
But does he still have a court case coming up, or is that the end of it?
He still has a court case coming up, but the big picture is he's at home.
No, I understand. I was just making sure that I was following along with exactly what exactly was going on, because I was like, if he's just getting released for how old he is, that's one thing. But if there's like, because at that point, going back to that bigger picture, we would still have to realize that the bottom line in this situation, more importantly, is we have to discuss procedure and the importance of procedure and how that procedure affects the situation as a whole.
But that's something else we met and talked about today as being a mentoring organization in Umoja, is along with that procedure has to be discussed with the powers that be, because that is dangerous in our community.
Well, speaking of Umoja, back in the day we used to have those Steer Straight programs. They may still exist. I'm just not sure. I'm sorry?
They don't exist no more. You're not allowed to take them to the prisons and stuff like that, because they have so many of our young brothers have so many family members that's incarcerated that don't work no more.
Really?
That don't work. That don't work at all. You just have to be realistic, because each one of us are affected by somebody that we know that has been to the penitentiary and everything. And that scares straight, because one thing about it, though, sister, our little old brothers, they don't have no fear. And like I said earlier, it's almost to the point, and it is to the point, the rites of passage to be incarcerated and locked up. So they actually look forward to going there. I mean, the Tarrant County Jail right now, do you know at certain parts of the day they roll a basketball out there and let these brothers play basketball? You know, you lift weights in the pen, you can watch BET and Modi and all these shows. So that ain't no big thing.
But if Scary Straight don't straighten them out, then how is mentoring them going to straighten them out? I mean, because if they don't have
The thing of it is, we're doing with mentoring is, here I am, and I'm going to do my best to show you something different. So I got to take you out of your element. I got to take you over to a TCU football game. I got to take you out to Tarrant County College South Campus, where we have a black president on campus named Dr. Ernest Thomas. Or when I get ready to hang up this phone in a few more minutes, I'm getting prepared to go to my other job where I work at, and I need to show you how black men work and take care of their family. So I got to expose you to something different, because the biggest problem our youth is having and the violence that we're going through is our children suffer from limited exposure. There's things they don't get to see. So as a mentor, I got to take you. We got one brother in our organization named Alton Wilkinson. Well, last weekend he took 15 boys over to the Great Wolf Lodge, and they stayed all night for a couple of days. See, so you got to take them out of the element and let them see something else.
Okay, but, wow, and I hear that. But I just can't believe that, you know, you got kids with no fear. I mean, you know, at 13, 14, 15, you have no fear of nothing? I mean, really?
No, it's not no fear, because the biggest thing, too, sister, and I have to go back and look at our churches and our mosques and our religious places, because I'm 45 years old. I feared my mama, but most of all, I feared God.
Yeah.
So that spiritual thing it's not in them. So that fear out of respect and love and reverence for God, a lot of that has not ever been brought up in them. So there's no fear thing, so there's no fear in them, so they don't think of no consequence. And if there's no consequence and repercussion, they don't mind getting put out of school. They don't mind going to Kimbo Road. They don't mind being locked up. They don't even fear death.
Let me ask you to be honest and transparent. In these mentoring programs, we know nothing is 100%. So what is the success versus the failure rate in what you do?
Well, I feel like this is 50-50.
Wow.
And I'm glad you asked that question, because last Thursday I spent 2 hours over in the Stop Six Project, and I talked to about 15 boys that were formerly in my Umoja program that I had at Dunbar High School and in the Dunbar Pyramid. And it was interesting, because in talking to all them little old brothers, I asked them the question. I said, man, I've been doing this for the last 15 years, and some of you young brothers were the first ones I ever had. What did I do wrong?
Mm.
And you know what the little brother told me? He said, man, look, Mama, you didn't do nothing wrong. He said, brother, you showed us everything. He said, we chose not to do the right thing. But right now, we wish we could trade places with some of these brothers that you're working with in the elementary and middle school now. He said, because out of 15 of us, don't now one of us got our driver's license. And ain't nobody in this circle got a high school diploma. But you showed us everything, and you took us everywhere, but we chose not to do it.
Mr. Muhammad, was it you or Dr. Mouton that told me last night about the graduation rate of that housing project on Rosedale in Fort Worth?
Well, it's not just in Fort Worth. If we
okay.
go to any housing complex and we start to weigh the options and start to look, how many young brothers in a housing complex are graduating?
Mm-hmm.
So when we looked at it, and I looked at the Fort Worth area, the Stop Six and Butler, and these numbers came straight from the housing authority, and not only did it come from the housing authority, but it came from me doing a lot of work and walking up through there. In 10 years, we only had one young man to graduate.
I mean, I'm sorry, did y'all hear that? A housing project which has how many apartment complexes? We're talking about a project, a housing project. How many possible apartment apartments are there?
There may be about 200 to 300 units in there.
Okay, 200 to 300 units, and in 10 years, one young man graduates high school.
Yeah, but that's not just there. But if we go, and the two brothers that's on the phone, if you go and you go in through those communities and you think back, if you went to school with some of them brothers that came out of housing complex, just ask yourself the question, because it's a difference. And a brother told me this the other day at the barbershop. It's a difference between growing up in the hood and growing up in the project. Growing up in the hood, you always trying to get out.
Okay.
But if you grew up in the project, y'all got to think about it. I got cable TV. I got air conditioning. I got central air. I got it's a check coming in once a month. And when I get a little older, there's a whole bunch of women around here that I can be intimate with. So I'm not trying to leave there.
So you're saying that people that are living in the projects, I mean, we're seeing generations and generations that won't get out because they've got to.
Yeah, but if we come from out of our cubbyholes and go in there, we can see that. We have 3 or 4 generations. I had a young man tell me once, and I took him for a trip in my car and took him down to the homeless shelter. He said, man, Mr. Muhammad, don't none of this mean what you're talking about. He said, I'm 16. My girlfriend is 19. She's going to have a second child. We're looking to get vaccinated. And I'm looking to live over there. I said, say, little brother, don't you want to own a home? He said, no, Mr. Muhammad, that's too much responsibility.
And how did, okay, but you know what? When you listen to that,
I don't. I know the other brothers may have something to say, so I'm just listening.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm blown away by that, Kundalini and AJ. What do y'all think?
Now, Mr. Muhammad, in the same vein, you might not remember, but I worked a couple of programs with you at a couple of schools in Fort Worth. I'm one of the poets. We came and did some things for y'all a couple of times.
Yes,
and
sir.
I think we did it under Fort Worth Slams. That's usually the name we run under. But the thing is, you know, one subject you had, see, I have one set of nephews whose father was killed when they were real little. I have another set of nephews whose father hadn't been around at all. And I spend weekends with them, let them spend weekends over my house. And now two of them, one of them is doing 10 years right now. The other one is pending well, they're trying to give him 20 years for being on papers, going to jail, and then he got out, he's still on papers, so he was caught with a gun. They want to give him 20 years for just carrying a gun, not that he used it. So, you know, we're combating that now, but the thing is, I sit down and I talk to him, I say, look, I say, y'all had all kind of skills, basketball, gymnastics, everything, and I was trying to get them, you know, trying to show them a different route. And that's exactly what happened. He said, it wasn't no problem with you, Uncle Jeff. That's what they called me. He said, it wasn't no problem with you, Uncle Jeff. He said, the problem was, you know, we was just hanging with our friends and got caught up. And a lot of times we don't see that they're, all of them consider themselves leaders, but when you're caught, they catch black boys in the nets like the fishermen used to catch fish, and everybody's guilty.
Yes.
Or they try to treat everybody like they're guilty. And the way to get everything off the books is put everybody on papers. You know, getting everybody on papers is the first step in having most of their freedoms taken from them as far as voting rights and all the other things, because they know you're going to do something. We ain't going to give you a lot of time. We're going to give you 6 months. You know, you say 18 months, you're going to do 9, or you're going to do 6. But that's the first step in actually taking hope from black people in the community.
Yes, sir.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Center Stage on Blog Talk Radio as we discuss Stop the Violence. What are the solutions? I mean, because, you know, we know that without any type of spiritual foundation in the household, and, you know, people say different things about what their beliefs in God is and that and this, that, and the other, but I think without believing in a higher power, you can think you're doing this all by yourself. And so if you get into a rut as a kid and you don't have a good parenting system in the house, I can see how stuff with the wrong crowd hanging around you can just get out of control real fast. So how important is religion in this whole thing?
Well, I think religion, the way it's said, it's important, but it's the process, the spirituality that's supposed to be religion, because you have too many people, you know, saying that they're religious, and when you see what they're doing, you know, people don't want to participate. But I think the thing is bringing balance into life as far as giving them an opportunity. President Barack's book, The Audacity of Hope, it's showing somebody the potential of hope, showing them there's a different way. And that's the initial process, because mentoring is the direct way to go. It's the most important way to show them that there's hope beyond the realm of what they've been told and what they're used to. There's other people doing it. And when you see other people like you, and I think that's why, you know, people were saying, why did you vote for President Barack Obama? Because he was black. And I voted for him about what he was about, but I voted for him mainly because he was black. Because all my life they said that you could be anything you want to be. You can even be president. And I think just that one moment of everybody seeing that, you know, this man came from small means or no means and worked his way up. He actually went to the best schools, but he did good in the schools. But you could actually see hope in the eyes of the people on that day, on that inauguration day. You saw so many people crying that had never cried in their lives for anything. And you saw people crying just from the presence of what was happening, just from the moment. And I think that's what hope looks like. And you have to show them hope. You have to show them potential. You have to show them the potential within themselves.
But what is so important, though, brother, and I don't think we're really looking at this, now the attack from the right wing and the Tea Party on our President Obama has a trickle-down effect on us in our community. Because when we look at this attack, now there is such an attack on us going at each other with the gang violence, to the point of it is that we also have to pay attention to the media, because they don't call him President Obama like we do. They just call him Obama. And it's a disrespect. So now when we see this disrespect, we done seen our community look at him rise to the high, and now we see him at an all-time low, and they make sure that we see him as that. So it also sets up in our youth mind is, yeah, you might want to be that, but look how they treat him.
I'm saying we've addressed multiple issues on the show, and that's definitely going to be one we get to.
Now we also have to look at the I even believe, and this is just me, that there's an underlying current with the violence that's going on in our community, because now you cut the social programs like the community center, where now the children got to pay $5 to join the community center, or where the summer camps that's coming up next year in Fort Worth, where it used to cost a parent $65 for the child to go, now it's going to cost them $300 to go. So now you got to look at the underlying current to the point of it is, okay, yeah, he got this, but what about the remnant?
Hold up. Addressing part of that. See, a lot of that is our fault, because if you look at the past elections and how many red states were up there, and everybody was saying they're going out to vote. See, everybody wanted to participate in voting for a president, but nobody wanted to participate in voting for the support of our communities, and that's what that last vote was for. So when everybody was getting when everybody was getting out on the president for his policies, and because he wasn't down with the trickle down effect of the President Reagan's and the other people, as far as all the billions they were giving to the major companies, he was actually trying to help the middle class and lower class. But that seems like that's making too big a government. But everybody's happy if they're the only ones getting money to disseminate. But when you help the lower class or the middle class people, there's a problem. And see, that's the underlying current, is that we're not participative in the process. We're complainers of the process. We're complainers of the outcome, but not participative in making a change.
If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment about our topic, if you're listening via the Internet, you can call in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. I don't know what the solution is, but I think, in my opinion, it's a lot of variables, and even our country may be, or our government may be partly to blame. Do you think that the fact that we're fighting two wars right now could have an impact on our children? If they're seeing that adults resolve conflict with wars, then how can we tell them that fighting is not the way to resolve conflict?
Well, the thing of it is, if we know, and growing up in America, we felt, and we always know that we the superpower.
Mm.
They've always talked at that, and we know that we're able to, and we have to even go back to slavery. If you didn't want to submit and do what the slave master said, he whooped you, he beat you, or he hung you, and he killed you. So we have to look at that, and we have to go deep into that. This country was built up on stuff like that. Our Native American brothers opened their doors up and let the European in, and what did he do? They came and got us, and what did they do? So the country was founded on that. It was founded on stuff like that. You know, if you didn't want to give us your all, we'll come blow your country up and put a tyrant in and take your all. You know, and that's how America was made. You know, it was made like that. We had the Black Wall Street. Black people had things. They had things going on, and they got upset about it, and they blew them up. They killed them. So we have to look at the history of the country. It was made like that. You know, so we look at the cowboy movies. So as parents, we used to tell our children, and my mom used to tell me, boy, if somebody hit you, you better hit them back. You better not come home like that. So we have to start to look at these things. So it's not just hitting no more. Now it's killing and shooting. But our country was made like that.
Vietnam fought in the 60s? And even though you lived through Vietnam, that didn't make you want to go and start a violent revolution. You know what I'm saying? So what's different? What's changed from the fact that we've seen these things all this time and it didn't affect the previous generations the way that it seems to be affecting this generation?
Because even what they tried to do with that, even if you look at Vietnam, what they do for us is to give us an image of what they want us to see is movies like Dead Presidents.
Mm.
Yes, sir.
You know what I'm saying? And we get that piece of it. And I want to go back real quick, because there's a couple things I want to speak on. Going back to the religion issue, one of the biggest problems that we have is we have a lack of the ability or really the time to do the research and put it back out, like what, how things get started and where stuff comes from. For instance, him talking, the Mr. Muhammad mentioned about, you know, the Native Americans that quote unquote let the white people in or whatnot and let these people in. We forget that in part of that story, we need to realize that those quote unquote Native Americans, they look like us. They don't look like the sure. image that they're put in on the TV screen. In addition to when we have knowledge of self, we'll understand that words that we use amongst each other, like we call our women black queens. Most people don't know that in the original English language, queen wasn't spelled the way it is now, Q-U-E-E-N. If you go back and research it, it was spelled C-W-E-N, and it actually meant a harlot or a prostitute. It did not mean what it means today. So the root to a lot of things is not transitioned to where it is today. In many words, and especially within religion, which even legion has a derivative in etymology, the word or the prefix R-E has a root in etymology. All these have roots, and we don't go to the root of the situation. We get so far, and we kind of stop with that point, and we forget that without going further and getting to that root, we don't get to the root of the problem at the end of the day, which leaves us with a situation, for instance, like we should never have waited for the city of Dallas to pull out supplying money to the city to put on events to bring us together. We should have already been talking about what can we do to have a solid foundation that, irregardless of what the city decides to do, it is important to us as not only individuals, not only as blacks, but members in the community, that we create a situation to finance our own irregardless. We learned those things from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We learned those things from Noble Drew Ali. We learned those things from people like Malachi York. There's a whole bunch of people that taught these things, but we are not applying them. We're still waiting on somebody else to come in and do a job that, if you go back to, and I think you mentioned this before, Kerry, we have a very large buying power, a power with this money in this country, and we're not manifesting that. We're not making that happen. We're waiting on somebody to tell us it's okay. When really we should do just like they did when they made the Declaration of Independence, and notice the word declaration. It's not a question. It's not asking, Brittany, is it okay that we break off? You know, it's been cool, but, you know, we'd like to go ahead and leave. No, they told them straight up, look, this is what it is. We got our own thing going on over here. We're finna go ahead and make our own thing happen. We appreciate the time and the business, but I'm going to tell you what, I'm finna holler at you because we got things to do. And we have to create that for ourselves. We can't keep waiting on those situations, and we need to start with the ones that will, but we got to go ahead and move and stop waiting for it to be okay. You know, we don't need, you know, I don't care who it is, whether or not it's President Obama or if it's President Clinton or if it's President Bush, we don't need to wait on any of them to come on TV and say, hey, look, African-American community, it's okay for you to work together.
Okay, we're going to go to the phone line. Walik Sabir has joined us. Good afternoon. How are you, Doctor?
Excellent. How are you?
Good. Have you been able to tune into any of the conversation so far?
Not really. I'm just kind of getting off of the plane, and I'm still in the airport. So I've got about 5 minutes or so. I'm waiting on my ride.
Okay. What we were talking about, of course, is the topic Stop the Violence, and we really want to know from someone like yourself who has been on the ground and seeing the gang activity close up and understands that, what's causing it? What's the root cause that's causing our teens to be so violent?
Well, you know, that's a very heavy question. It's complicated, but it's simple at the same time. You know, just coming from an academic background, there are, you know, kind of theories, you know, we could attach to the whys. I would ultimately say that after a little bit over 24 years in law enforcement and over 19 years working within the gang unit, that oftentimes it boils down to choices, what our exposures are. You know, when you start factoring mental health and the mass media, and that's, I'm sure, a whole other talk show, once you start factoring out those other items, then, yeah, it can get even more complicated. But ultimately, I truly believe that it boils down to ultimate individual choices that we make. It's just like this. Everything that we know about life is something that we learned. We picked it up from somewhere. So when you talk about violence, whether it's teenage violence, senior citizen violence, whatever level that you're talking about, it's all learned behavior. Now, what do you do about redirecting that learned behavior? Because all behavior, if it's learned, then you also have to accept that it can be unlearned.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is the junction that we're at right now with our young people around the world. It's like, how do we or how do they unlearn that behavior?
So what's the answer?
Ooh, let me see. Are you ready to swallow that pill? I don't have the answer. I don't think anyone on any book or any talk show has the answer because, as I said, it's a complicated, but it's also a very simple mathematical equation.
But I think
it does boil down to ultimate choices. But you know, in saying that, there has to be a collective effort. Of all types of villages that come on board. If it's the
let
church,
me ask you a question then. That said, would the first line of defense start at the home? Accountability from the parents.
Yes. But understand that not all parents are created equal.
Okay.
Yeah, but what if I don't have a parent? What if
right.
I just had somebody to brought me into the world?
True.
If you listen to our youth and you ask them young brothers and stuff, they ask them about their father and stuff, we got a really good understanding. The brother say, man, my daddy was just sperm donor. This is a conversation. I don't know who my daddy is, you know. And that's what really got me into mentoring, because I used to work in the cafeteria in the Fort Worth ISD, and the little students used to ask me, Mr. Johnny, are you my daddy?
Ooh, ouch.
See, that's a whole other thing. But I got to get ready to go to work, and I like to thank y'all and everything.
Thank you, Mr. Muhammad.
All you brothers, man, let's up to work, and whatever I can do, I do my best to help you. May God bless you. May Allah bless you. And the peace and the blessings be upon all y'all. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Muhammad.
All right.
Assalamu alaikum.
Sure. And he had a good point that not all homes are created equal. And so that said, but we cannot say that, you know, you can just, I guess, have children and not have any responsibility as a parent. I mean, you cannot just have as many kids as you want, open up the door at 7 o'clock, let them out, and then you see them again at 12 o'clock midnight. That's not fair to the rest of us, because basically you have teens raising themselves. So what is the solution if you're having children to, you know, poor parenting should not be something that the community has to suffer because of. If you're a poor parent, maybe there should be something in place that somebody helps you with that situation. And I hate to put everything on the government, but if we don't get control of it, the government's going to control it anyway.
But at the same point in time, we have, I ain't going to say we have like a totality where we can kill that whole situation by ourselves, but at the same point in time, it's just like with drugs. If it's so big of a deal that you don't want a drug deal in your area, you sitting back and watching it happen, you ain't saying nothing, or you, quote-unquote, no snitching and whatnot, what's the overall effect? It still affects everybody, you know, as a totality. We've got to realize that at some point in time, to the best of our ability for those who may or may not have children, we all have to kind of play a role to help each other. And that's the only way I think it's going to balance out, besides just waiting on the government to come in. We got to find a way to play some kind of part in it.
You know what? Speaking of that, Dr. Shabir.
Yes.
Selene just alluded to no snitching. That's a rule that seems to be throughout throughout our community, no snitching. What do you say to that mentality as far as our people are concerned?
You know, and it's funny that you mentioned that. It's really an urban legend as far as I'm concerned. People say a lot of things, but they do something totally different. They will say no snitching in the neighborhood, but, you know, honestly, when they get into our office, you know what they do?
Go ahead.
They look to the left. They look to the right.
Yeah.
They see that there's nobody else in the room, and then they start telling everything.
I think you need to repeat that. So the same person is in the middle of the street in the community saying, y'all need to stop this snitching. They'll go into the police department and actually do snitching.
Look, people come into the office and they tell us about crimes we didn't even know about. They tell us about where their grandmamas play bingo at. They tell us all the business of the church. They tell us stuff we don't even want to know. So what you have to find, understand that when people are looking at doing real jail time, nobody's going to go to jail for the next person, especially as a teenager in the state of Texas, when you're talking about giving a teenager 40 years. There isn't a teenager that I've ever met to say, you know what, I'll do 40 years for my homeboy. Now, they may say it out in the neighborhood, but when they get into the office, it's a total different situation.
And that's just something that, I mean, started. It almost seems like to me stop snitching only applies if it doesn't affect you.
Exactly. There's a very funny episode on Boondocks where they did a little spinoff on no snitching, and then what it boiled down to was that there's a snitch in every neighborhood.
Riley didn't even want to do no snitching, and he was trying to figure out what he got to do because somebody stole his bike, and he knew who did it, but he didn't want to say, and he's trying to figure out how he's going to get his bike back, but he can't get his bike back without snitching.
You know, there's this saying that the first who talks, the first are the first who walk, and it applies almost all of the time. The first who talk are the first who will walk. There are people out on the streets today that are responsible for the murder of many teenagers and other individuals. But guess what? They were the first who were talking. So, you know, when you talk about the criminal justice system or the injustice system, you know, like that's another talk show. But unfortunately, I'm going to have to jump off of the air.
Okay.
Because I don't want to miss our connection here. And I really do appreciate and thank you all for allowing me to speak, and I will definitely stay in touch, and please stay in touch with me as well.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Sabir.
Yes, thank
you. Although that was Dr. Waleek Sabir with the Fort Worth Police Gang Unit. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We're going to pick up 682-233. You're on center stage. Good afternoon. Now, again, Dr. Mouton has joined us. Dr. Marion Mouton is a principal here in Fort Worth Independent School District, and you have been with Fort Worth School System, I believe, since 1998. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Tell us from the school system aspect of it. You're in the elementary part of it. What do you see that's like red signs, red flags, alerts, cautions, as far as behavior is concerned, in kids that let you know they're in trouble? What should we be looking for?
Well, one of the main things I'm seeing is like just a lack of focus, lack of attention. You know, just a lot of acting out you can see in elementary.
And you can see that as early as elementary. I think Dr. Mouton and I talked last night briefly about this, and he told me about one kid that was constantly coming to school and falling asleep.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And what was his situation?
Well, you know, I don't know the whole situation. It was my first year at the school I'm at now as a principal. And once the teacher started making relationships with that student and letting him know that they did care, that's when he's a success story now. He's not a teacher. He was one of the ones I was really concerned about. If somebody could have dropped out in the first grade, I think he probably would have dropped out if he had the option. But now he's wanting to come to school. So going back to the relationship stuff, at his house, I don't know what all was going on in his house, but it wasn't a nurturing environment at his house. But the one thing that I'm seeing more than anything with the most of the students having some issues is a lack of a positive role model, a lack of a dad at home.
Well, how can we fix that? Because we can't put a father in every home.
Well, you can't put a father in home, but you know, one thing that we do at our school is we actively seek positive role models to be on staff as teachers, and then we start looking for mentors, we start looking for making sure we have some male mentors connected to these young men, because they have to have somebody show them how to be a man as they get older. If we don't nip it in elementary, when they get into high school and middle school and high school, you know, they're on the wrong track.
Dr. Mouton and I talked briefly last night as well about the fact that you have a rule about how many days can they be absent before your school contacts the parent and say, we have a problem.
If they're absent more than 3 days, then my teachers already contacted. They're absent more than two, but as an office staff, after 3 days, we start contacting what's going on with this individual.
And when are they dropped off of your roll?
Well, as far as dropped off the roll, you know, legally we can't drop them off the roll, because once they get in the first grade, that's the mandatory school age for elementary, then you can't drop them off the roll. Then you just have to go through the process, the due process of they go to the VA, you know, you do different kind of letters, they get the courts involved. But before we even go to that step, we have a company that works with us, one of our adopters, DRS, the Street Resolution Services. They come in and do some mediation between the school and the parents. Just see what it is that's causing the student either to be late or absent, and try to help that parent, that family get what they need. One time it was a matter of just having an alarm clock, so they went out and bought some alarm clocks for that family. So before we get to the extreme where, you know, we're sending them to the VA because we want them to learn, want them to be in school, so they're benefiting being at home, we try to exhaust all other avenues before we get to that extreme.
Mm. And something that we discussed in our discussion last night that I thought was a different approach is that you realize that if a child is coming to school hungry, then he's probably not going to be very focused in school. So you put in what kind of program in school to make sure that every kid had at least two meals a day?
We have what's called a breakfast in the classroom. You know, now our school is like about 92% economically disadvantaged. I mean, it's been pretty overused meals. But we noticed that a lot of them, when they get to lunch, they're eating their lunch because they're hungry. They haven't ate breakfast. So before we started this program, we had a little snack there that we could have for them to eat. But once we started this breakfast in the classroom program, we noticed our tardies went down, and we noticed we didn't have as many distance issues as we had before, because if they're coming to school hungry, they're not going to be able to focus on what the teacher's telling them, because they're looking at, okay, I'm ready. You got to meet that basic need first, which is at hunger. So making sure everybody has breakfast first thing in the morning, that kind of took that little item off the table.
Okay. If you just tuned in, we're talking about Stop the Violence right here on Center Stage on Blog Talk Radio. There's so many root causes to why a child acts out. And no one, you know, knows what's going on in the home but the parent and the children. But obviously there's many warning signs that can alert even just the community, the school, the church, that the child has a problem. But have we gotten away from it takes a village to raise a child? Does everybody say it's just about me and mine, and we don't care about what's going on with the other kids in our communities? Is that how this whole train has gotten off track? Anybody?
Well, you know, now I can't chime in on that one. I just know it. Now, if I speak from my campus as my point, is that we have a wraparound. We have several churches that have joined on board to help us. We have several corporations that are adopters, and we have a wraparound. We just focus on academics. There's more than academics. We have to get that social life as well. So that's why we try to get that social needs met, you know, by tapping into the other community resources.
And what I was gonna say is, I think we keep old concepts, but we don't update the words to mean what they should mean in this particular era, because the community, just like you said, the community is still the community, but we no longer live on the other side of the tracks. We no longer live in what you consider villages or areas of known, of known ethnicity. What it is now is our community is all those around us. So those are the mentoring programs. Those are the churches. Those are the corporations. Those are the little stores that donate school supplies to the schools because they know some of the children at school don't have them. Those are the Walmarts and the other people that do have programs set up. But see, we're still not taking advantage of all the things around us as though we don't know anything. We're waiting for somebody, just like my brother Kulin said, we're waiting for somebody to give us a hand instead of saying, okay, what can I do to get this that I know is out there? See, we're reactionary instead of action, I guess, people of action. Instead of being people of action, we are reactionary people. And I just think that needs to change.
Okay, I see the phone lines are jammed. If you're on the line and have a question or a comment about the topic, press 1. Or if you are listening via the Internet and would like to chime in on what we're talking about, the number to call is 347-850-8390. Again, the number is 347-850-8390. Dr. Mouton, you said something last night that I found that probably should be like a pilot program from around the country. We talked about the fact that you came in, every teacher had to reapply for the position. Explain how that whole process took place.
It wasn't when I came in. Dr. Johnson, a superintendent, she had a vision, you know, and she named it's a PEAK program. It's Public Educators Accelerating Kids is the name of the program. And what she did, she chose several schools that had either had a history of high turnover or were having some issues with academics. So what the concept was she said we get students in there that are there to help these students and get the best of the best in the schools, because research shows that majority of the time the schools, like our schools, get the brand new teachers out of school, ones that just really don't want to be there. So her vision was to go in there and get some teachers that want to be there, that want to accelerate the students, and then that have a proven track record. And so that's what I was able to do. But it wasn't my first year, it was like my second year that this program came into effect.
But you were able some kind of way to clearly see those that were in it for, I guess, whatever reason, I guess the love of the kid, and then others who maybe weren't as motivated in that way?
Well, we were able to look at data to determine what would be the determining factor. And like I say, if the data was showing something different, then that's what we made based our decision on as far as teachers, you know, new teachers coming on board.
Okay. We're going to go back to the phone lines. Area code 214-450. You're on center stage.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. You know, I just kind of want to digress a little bit about parenting. To me, I feel like that parenting is if not the major factor, you know, one of the biggest factors. The guy earlier mentioned that, you know, every home is not created equal, and, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's the father that's not in the home, single mother homes and things like that, or even if it's a father without a mother in the home, I think it still boils down to a parenting, because a lot of time parents these days, they still want to be kids. And, you know, the way I see it is if the parents are not dead, if both parents have not been deceased, the responsibility and the well-being of that child and, getting involved in violence and things like that all falls back on the parents, because, I mean, if it's a single mother, it is still her responsibility if the father is not there to try to put that child in a better surrounding to where they can, you know, get some type of discipline or have some type of father figure, you know, whether they live in the projects, the hood, or a nice neighborhood, wherever they live at. It's that parent's responsibility to provide a stable foundation for their child. And so, you know, a lot of times these parents say, oh, well, you know, he's just, you know, this child, my son, I don't know why he's doing such and such. And it starts as a baby, you know, as these kids grow up as a baby, you have to put that discipline in their life, whether they have a, you know, whether you're raising them single or not. And, you know, that's just the way I feel about it. It's parenting a lot of these days. Then you got these kids raising kids nowadays. You know, the mama is 29 and the child is, you know, 16, 15 years old. And, you know, that mama still wants to go out and party, or that daddy still wants to go out and party because, you know, they had to raise a child. And, you know, that took away from the time they had to be a child.
And well, what's the answer to making a parent?
You said what's the answer for the parents, or
how can we make a parent be a parent? What's the answer to that?
I mean, well, the parent just said, "Go ahead."
No,
go ahead.
I think he that is part of the problem. But see, we have children being parents of children, and
right.
and he said, you know, parents want to be children. No, parents are children because
right.
there's so many people having babies too early, and they say, I still got partying in my life and all this. And I
right.
think it's and see now this cycle is being reproduced and reproduced and reproduced, where you have a 13-year-old having a baby or a 16-year-old having a baby, and her mother was 16 when she had her, and her mother was 16 when she had her. It's this repetitious process. So it is. So the whole thing is education. See, education is the answer. But in order to get to education, we have to be parents of our children for them to want to get an education. So it's really a twofold question and a twofold answer, and the answer is still within the community. It's us being parents of our community. See, if you have parents that are not being parents in the community, you have other parents that have to be associated with that child to show them what parents look like. And fathers not in that community. Fathers have to be fathers of the community and not just of the children that he birthed. He has to become a father to the boy walking down the street sag and say, hey, how you doing? You know, where you live? You know, who are you? And see, when you talk to children, they're children. They might want to, you know, have this grimace on their face and look mean and mean mugging and act like the rap songs they hear. But when you talk to them, there are children inside a child's body. They just don't know how to be a child because they're not living in that particular situation at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Caller, do you want to add anything else?
Yeah, I mean, no, I completely agree with what he's saying. Because, it's a cycle that has gotten completely out of control. And, you know, and a lot of our older men don't want to take on that responsibility that we really need to take on. Like you said, I mean, a parent needs to be a parent, has nowadays more than ever, has to be a parent of the community as opposed to just a parent of, you know, his own child, which is the way it was, you know, back in the days. You know, you go down the street and, you know, Jim's mama could whoop you, you know, whoop your butt if she see you acting up, and then when you get home, you still get another butt whooping because, you know, you know, that neighborhood is going to look out for you. And that's what it has to be. It's just, I mean, I don't know the specific way to drill it into the community, but, I mean, I guess one person has to take that initiative, and we need more people to take that initiative to go ahead on and, you know, take control. If one person starts to act, you know, it'll start a chain reaction. It's just a lot of people are afraid to act, and my fiance
afraid to be
the
first
proud.
One, huh?
Right.
Nobody
right.
want to be the first one.
Well, thank
right.
you, caller. I appreciate your comment.
Hey,
oh,
what's your name
back?
Again, man? What's your
Hi.
Name again?
I'm sorry, I closed his line prematurely. We're going to go back to the phone lines. Area code 202-368, you're on the line. And Mr. Muhammad, I've opened your phone lines back up. Area code 202.
Hey, how you doing? It's great.
Fine, how
show.
Are you?
I'm fine. Hey, I think that brother's onto something. Problems we have, I see, I've been working on this problem for about 20 years, is the breakdown of the families. We simply got too many single mothers raising these boys, and these boys aren't getting the proper balance. You know, you really need a man, male figure in the household because to balance out boys, because boys need a reference point on how to become a man. You know,
okay.
I actually grew up with a father, and my father didn't actually tell me what I needed to do to be a man. He rarely told me that. What happened was, as a boy, and me and my brothers, we watched my father get up and go to work every day. I watched my father take out the trash. I watched how my father treated my mother. I watched how my uncles and my father interacted. So therefore, I got a reference point on how to be a male from my father, my uncles. And it's reinforced by my coaches and things like that. Now what you have is that's all gone. And girls need a father, too. I don't care what people think. They actually need that male hand, too. And that's gone now. We have a 70% out-of-wedlock child rate. Something like 80% of our households are being raised by women. That is the problem. It's the breakdown of the black family. And I'm sorry.
But, Color, as I said, we can't put a father in every household. So what's the answer?
It's, you know what, the answer, you aren't going to like it. What we have to do, and I've thought about this for a long time, we have to take away the incentive for these girls to have babies, because I'm sick of running to 29-year-old grandmothers on the dance floor. You know, what we have to do is take away the incentive. I know it's painful. We have to start with welfare. We have to start with food stamps, school lunch programs, the WIC program, Section 8 housing, welfare, housing, all that. We have to slowly dismantle that system because people are using that system not as a temporary. They're using it as a way of life. We have to start taking away the incentive. So if a girl decides to have a baby, she's going to think about having a baby at 13 or 14, okay? She's going to think hard about it. That's what we have to do. I know it's painful, but there's no other way.
Well, if you remember.
I need to ask a question on that because if we look at stuff like that, they ain't got welfare and all that in our third world countries like Haiti and stuff. We got to look at this. You know, there, it goes back to the point of it is of being more educated, but the problem that we have is a lack of knowledge of self. And then where I pulled in and when I got back on the phone, that is, the brother was talking about one of the things Mr. Louis Farrakhan said, something that makes a lot of sense, and we have to look at it. We got a study guide called Self-Improvement, the Basic for Community Development. And I understand if I improve myself, I can improve my community because I have to go back and look at where I came at and the way I came up. I caused havoc in my neighborhood. I caused a lot of problems in my neighborhood. But now I'm at a point of, okay, I need to know how to go back and help clean up and help straighten up my neighborhood. And this falls back on us as men. You know, even if the child does come from a single-parent household, there are still some men in that community that need to be responsible because a lot of us on this phone, we grew up with single moms in the house. But even the
minor would tell you. You know what? We have been trying. I'm a 44-year-old man. I've coached Little League. I refereed basketball games. I've worked in the community. I live in a black community, even though I don't have to. I've always worked in the black community for at least 20 years. The problem is only getting worse, man. We need to start with some new stuff.
Let me say one thing. I see where it's going. I'm saying, just like I said before, that the problem is education. But in order to get to that point, just like there were programs that I think when President Obama first got in office, and when he was actually running for election, there was a reference to the same programs that you're talking about being temporary situations for those particular people because there are entities set up for single parents or women that don't have jobs or women that's struggling to actually have daycare, have WIC, have their apartment paid for as they have their school paid for. So everything is a means and method of education. But see, our thing is we need to go back into the community to work with our boys. Regardless of ethnicity, to show the importance of education and to help them with the problems that they're having in the school and math and English and reading and those other things. See, I understand sports is cool, but education is paramount. See, we help them. And one problem is you have boys that want to go to school but don't know how to read. You have boys that want to stay in school but don't know how to do math. See, you help them with the problems that they're having, and you solve the. See, every individual has a different problem. But if you don't talk to the individuals, you don't know the problems they're having. But they're hanging out as a group. So you address each individual as an individual to that particular individual's problem. We can begin to solve the problem one child at a time.
I actually disagree, and I should tell you why. I coached kids years ago. Now I'm coaching
baseball.
I coached kids years ago. Now I'm coaching their kids. And the cycle is continuing, man. We have to start with some new, we can't keep throwing money at the problem. We can't keep throwing money at it.
I'm saying, see, you say we need to approach a new approach. See,
we need
some
new ideas.
Okay, wait. You coach kids and you're coaching the children, right?
Yeah, I am.
So what I'm saying is, see, the new is even if you coach, you see what that child is having a problem with in school. See, education is the problem. So that would be a new approach for you, even though that may be not on your agenda to do. But I'm saying we all have to transition ourselves to the present problems that we're having. And the problem is education because the dropout rate is over 70%, even though they have it around 50.
I disagree. I don't think the problem is lack of education. I really don't. I think the problem is too many kids are born out of wedlock to irresponsible women and men. That's the problem.
We can address that problem.
We have to attack the problem.
But when you say they're born out of wedlock, that comes from lack of education. Because what we have to understand is, it goes back to what I said earlier, the limited exposure, and that comes from lack of education. And then
Caller,
may
I ask a question? And I'm just trying to follow your thought process. Are you African American?
Yeah, I'm a black man.
Okay, I was trying to understand. Okay, then then you understand the plight of the black man and all of that, you know, in your comments.
I've been a black man for 44 years. Okay.
Okay.
And I understand the problem. I've been working on this for 20 years at least. And
I've been working on it longer.
I hear these other two brothers talking about it, but they don't know what the problem is. The problem is kids being born to single parent households. That is the problem we're facing. That's the problem.
But that's what people don't get. But we can't take the kids and put them back.
We need to take away the incentive to have kids.
No. Wait a minute. Okay. Hold up 1 second. See, you're talking about addressing. You're talking about addressing future problems by not them having babies. But I'm saying we can't take the babies that are present and put them back. So our dilemma is addressing the present day problem.
I'm not trying to save them. I'm not trying to save the kids that are here because if I work with a kid and I do it a lot that has a problem, okay. The problem is 9 months later, there's going to be another kid. And 9 months is it's, you know what I'm saying? 9 months later, there's another kid and another kid. We have to break the cycle because I'm dealing with kids that I've dealt with 20. I'm dealing with their kids. I dealt with these same knuckleheads, you know, 20 years ago. Now I'm dealing with their stupid kids. And you know what? I'll probably be dealing with their dumbass kids in another 16 years, man.
You dealt with the father, so you're dealing with the son. See, the thing is right now we have a new modern day problem, and the problem is education. Just like the same thing you're saying, that stupid ass kids, and you're dealing with their stupid ass kids. And see, that's the way you're looking. But see, the way we make somebody not stupid, he's stupid usually is somebody that just don't know, or somebody that's ignorant of the facts. So we can label them whatever. But see, by being that instrument, you can disagree as soon as I finish. As soon as I finish, you can disagree. Okay, but you labeled them stupid, and I understand that because a lot of times people don't. Yes, you did. You said stupid ass kids, but I'm just saying that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish, man.
You guys, we're gonna have to go back to the phone lines.
Okay, one second. I'm making this last point. I'm saying until you actually address that particular child at this particular date and time about the problems they're having in the educational system, that will actually send them on so they won't be another one that you say will have a child in 9 months. See, the idea of it is to stop that one individual that you're working with at the time, because you can't stop groups at a time. You have to stop one at a time. And we start by doing one at a time, by addressing it one at a time. So let's do it that way, and let's take the stupid out of our mouths.
Okay. We're going to come back to you. We're going to try to come back to you before the end of the hour. We're going to go to area code 469-247. You're on center stage.
Hey,
good afternoon,
guys. I totally agree with the education portion of it. I was brought up, my mom, she remarried, and, you know, I totally didn't agree with the person that she remarried. So I did have a father figure, although it was not the best father figure that could have, you know, been raising me. But I think that it goes a lot towards the parenting education and, you know, the own self. I mean, I could have gone a completely different route with my life the way that I was raised, but I decided not to. So, you know, it was a personal choice for me not to be like my parents, per se. So, you know, if the men were to step up more than what they are now, then that would have a lot to do with it. You know, and I think a lot of younger people that are having kids, they're too prideful to admit that, okay, well, I need help, or, you know, I was wrong for, you know, having kids too early and I need some assistance from an older person. None of these young kids want to listen to older people, and that's the problem. They think that they know everything, and they don't. And I think a lot of younger generations, you know, I'm 23, and, you know, I've listened to a lot of older people. Like, my grandma is one of my mentors. And, you know, she has a lot to tell me. She has a lot that she can educate me on, some stuff that I could never know from, you know, the 23 years that I've been alive. And it's just a lot of mess going on that could be prevented if more men were to step up to the plate and not be trying to hold up some image that they're not. and, you know, not be so ignorant. And women are ignorant as well. We can take blame for some of that as well. So I agree with education. Education is an issue.
And I think the most important thing for daughters is to have their fathers in their life, because, see, if a young girl grows up knowing what love looks like, she won't be caught up in all the mistakes of that she thought love looked like.
Well, see, I agree with that as well, but when my mom remarried, she remarried a drunk, abusive man. And, you know, my dad, he was a crackhead. And, you know, I refuse to look for a man like that. The guy that I'm with now, you know, he's an awesome man. And, you know, he's not a drug addict or an alcoholic. And, you know, we're both striving to reach successful goals in life. And, you know, I don't want to be another number of, you know, crackhead.
So, I want to congratulate you on you finding your way through the lessons that you have. I want to congratulate you on that for sure.
Carla, I think you made some excellent points. I think a lot of times people need to ask for help because I shouldn't say nobody, but a lot of times people are very leery of stepping in to someone else's business if they see their children are out of control. They
right.
may talk about them, but they're very rarely
Well, that's because they already know somebody's going to be defensive about it. You know, if I see somebody as frequently as I see this, you know, a young lady out that has her kids out and not paying attention to them and just letting them do whatever, I know if I say something to her, then she's going to automatically be defensive about, well, why is B trying to tell me about X, Y, Z? She don't know nothing. You know, just because it's an assumption that I'm just as ignorant as she is, although that's not the case.
And I think you made another point of herself. I think a lot of times we're getting some feedback from somebody's background. If you could mute your background.
Is that better? Maybe my signal.
I think it was you.
Okay.
I think you made the point of love for self. I think a lot
right.
of the people that we see are acting out, there's no love for self.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you don't love yourself, then you probably won't do everything you can, you know, to make yourself a better person or to become something in life. So if you have a feeling of hopelessness, then I can see how you can get with the wrong crowd and then therefore
right.
end up in trouble, either find yourself in the criminal justice system or find yourself in the grave because of your crowd, which is another thing that we need to touch on. How important is the crowd that you're hanging with?
I think it's very important. You are who you associate with. So as a female, if you're hanging around with a lot of flamboyant women, then, you know, you most likely are borderline flamboyant, if not flamboyant, unless you're there trying to help them and, you know, encourage them not to be loose.
Okay.
And, you know, the same with men. As a man, if you're hanging around with so-called thugs and you're trying to be a little thug running around the street, then that's who you're going to be. That's how you're going to perceive things. That's your image because that's who you're associating with.
Well, thank you, caller. I think another thing that we can speak on as far as the hanging with the crowd, why is it that so many children are followers? Why are we not teaching our kids to be leaders? Dr. Mouton, I think we spoke last night about how you can see clear leaders in as early as elementary school.
That's true. You're right.
And how is it that some kind of way one excels to the leader of the pack and the rest are just followers, so whatever the leader says do, everybody just kind of follow suit? What's going wrong in the home?
That's a question bigger than I can answer.
Is what?
I can't, I mean, it's off trying issues, but that's a question bigger than I can answer today. I don't know what makes one person be the leader and the other person not, and they're having the same circumstances at home. But, you know, I just go back to one of the reasons why we're missing these leaders is because a lot of the thing is just churches. They're missing that church. They need to be in that church because, you know, the man is the leader, and
mm-hmm.
the boys aren't taught that. You know, but like I said, I can't remember the person's name, but it goes back to that man. They need a role model, somebody that they can model after to go on and break that cycle.
Mr. Muhammad, what do you say?
Well, I think when we look at that, it goes back to breaking the cycle, and with our children, the fear sets in of that I gotta follow him, or they done gave him a reputation of being a tough one, but it goes back to the knowledge of self. But if I don't know who I am, I can follow somebody else.
Right.
I can do what somebody else is telling me to do, because I don't know who I am.
But see, doesn't it go back to parent accountability again? Because should you as a parent know who your child's friends are? Shouldn't you know the parents of your child's friends? Isn't that all part of parenting?
Part of parenting, but if the parent don't have a relationship with the child, you know, that's like I have incidents where I hear parents all the time say, my son ain't no gangbanger, Mr. Muhammad. But, well, have you seen your son wardrobe? Everything he wear, either red or blue. Have you paid attention to that? Have you looked and seen your son wardrobe, where everything he wearing is either red or blue? Have you ever asked him just take his shirt off? You don't know if your son got tattoos or not. You just ain't seen them. So you have to really look at this and start to understanding that it's a lot more that we have to do. It's what the sister said earlier about loving yourself. But it's hard to love me if I don't know me.
That's true.
And it's very hard for me to love God if I don't love me.
Mm.
You know, we say that easily. Well, just love God and love. But how can I love God if I don't love me? And I think God will be very upset if you love yourself, if you love him and don't love self. So what we look at when we understand is a lot of our people and our youth, they don't see the God in them, and they don't love the God in them. And this is why we have the violence in our community that we do, because we don't know self. And how can I know self, and I ain't nobody ever told me who I was, and so I can't love me, so I don't have a problem with snatching your purse or hurting you, because I don't know me.
Very true. That's very true. I hear all of that, but there's so many variables to why our teens are acting as violently as they are. But how do we begin to, I mean, if there's, you know, 100 reasons why, how do we address that 100 reasons to stop the violence? Because they're perpetrating violence on all of us. So can begin to do today? Let's just say
I think as me personally, as a mentor, is to work harder to show them who they are, to make my word bond with them, to not lie to them, to like I said at the beginning of the conversation, I have to expose them to all the things and get them out of their community to let them know that there's a whole big old world out there. And then also the brother said something that was really heavy. Education is the key.
Yeah.
Because another reason a lot of our boys act out, sisters, because our boys don't know how to read. So when the teacher in the classroom call on them to read, they don't know how to read. So now they don't mind getting in trouble and going sitting down in Mr. Mouton's office because, hey, I can't read, I can't write, because ain't nobody at home teaching me this. So it's just basic skills that we got to get back to as a community. And this is me. I charge up all the black men. I can't deal with other men. But I charge up all the black men in our community, hey, man, you got a duty and a responsibility. You got something that you need to do to give back to these little old brothers. Even the brothers that's coming out, don't lie to these little old brothers how it is in the penitentiary. Tell these brothers the truth. And that right there will help us in the long run to stop the violence, because we can't wait on the police.
Mm. If you just tuned in, you're on the stage on Blog Talk Radio. If you're on the line and have a question or a comment about our topic today, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, call in at 347-850-8390. Number to call is 347-850-8390. AJ, you were saying what? Hello?
I don't know if AJ, I hope we didn't lose. I was going to say this, going back to the school talking. I was just going to say, we need to steal that whole, if we want a solution, we need to steal that motto from Nike called Just Do It.
Ooh.
Yes, sir.
And go ahead and just make it happen. And, you know, I totally agree with what I believe Mr. Muhammad saying about, you know, we need to do it from a community standpoint. That's what, again, we're, our leaders have, the ones that we, the few and the ones that we have had, that's what they've been explaining to us for the longest, and we're not really taking an application to that. And it's interesting to see that the gentleman who called in earlier who was talking about these families and these single mother parents, if you listen to the description of what he described that he learned in his life, there was a father, there were uncles, there were coaches, there were teachers, and there was this multiplicity of people who were involved that he actually watched. It's funny that he had that angle that he felt about the children, yet he didn't realize that there was a situation in which it's funny, we can do it with computers, but we can't do it with the community, and we don't know how to multitask.
That caller is still on the line. We're going to open back up his phone lines. One thing you said that troubled me, you said in the economy in which we have right now, you said that we needed to begin to weed out some of the programs like welfare and Section 8. Then what are we going to do with all those families that are living on those systems?
Me?
Yes.
I think we should phase them out within 10 to 15 years, phase them out,
right,
and dry up the
right
funds. And just eventually, you know, when these girls, when they're growing up, 14, 15, they won't have it there.
So they'll have
to look at other options of raising a kid.
But
have to start.
Hold
on, let me finish, man. Hold on, I didn't interrupt you. Let me finish now. Now, what they need to do, you know what, these kids aren't really stupid, because if you talk to a whole lot of these kids, they're very smart. Ask them how many points the Shaq get and their averages. These boys know numbers. They're very intelligent in other ways. But, you know, you can't blame the educational system. We spend so much money in our educational system. We have remedial programs. We have special needs programs. We spend more money on black and Hispanic youth than any other kids in America. The problem is these boys are not opening up textbooks. They don't want to learn because they think learning ain't cool. Okay, everyone wants to be cool. No one wants to open a textbook and apply themselves. They don't want to do the hard work. That's the problem we have. Now, how do we solve the problem? I'm sorry. We've been working on this problem for a long time. Nothing's working. The problem's only getting worse. Praying ain't going to work. Throwing money at the problem's not going to work. We have to start cutting off the funds. Take away the incentive for girls to have babies. Take away the money. That will force girls.
I'm going to
send a message that prayer doesn't work, are we?
We have to start cutting off the money, and then people will start making better decisions. A girl will decide, I'm not going to have a baby at 14 or 17. I'm not going to be struggling out here with no man and no money and no crib, because these girls, the reason why they're having these babies is because they can. They have a baby, they can get Section 8, they can get a house, they can get tuition assistance. They're doing it because the programs are there for you. Okay, it's designed for you to have a child, to work the system. We have to take away the system, all right?
You're African American.
I'm a black man for the third time. I'm black, all right?
Okay, no, I got that part. I'm trying to understand what race are you specifically speaking of? Because it sounds like you're targeting the African American race when you say that, but there's a whole lot of Hispanic females.
I don't care about them. I only care about blacks. I don't give a damn about Hispanic and white folks. I care about black brothers and sisters. That's what I care about, okay? I don't care about Hispanic. I don't care what they do.
This goes back to the knowledge of self, brother. And if we go back and we study Willie Lynch and we understand.
I understood it. I know the letter.
We were made as breeders. So now this is the question that I'm going to ask you and put back on you. Because if we do it the way you say we need to do it, basically what we need to do is we need to castrate all the young brothers and we need to tie all the sisters too. Because sex is a natural thing. But if you don't have knowledge of self, and we use sex as entertainment because brothers like you hadn't came back and showed me something different. Then we got to be real. Show me something different, because sex is entertainment in our community. I don't know. I ain't got no money to go to the movies. I can't do nothing else. So we sit around and we have sex and we do these things. So this is something that we have to really look at. Because we got to look at it, because there's a whole bunch of people in our community and even maybe on these telephones that was an accident.
Look, we were having sex, too, when I was a kid. We were having sex when I was 17 years old, 18. Hell, we've been having sex since the dawn of mankind, okay? But what we weren't having 29-year-old grandmothers, a woman having three kids by three different men, and they're all in jail, drug dealers, gangbangers.
They were doing it.
You know, we didn't have all that stuff back then,
know.
Huh?
They were doing it, but you just didn't know. Because it goes back to the point of it is, you came, from the household where you had structured men and women in the household that helped you. So now you have a duty and an obligation.
No, I don't. No.
Oh, you
don't?
What would you call in for?
To tell these ladies and people is that we don't know what the problem is. We don't know what the real problem. The problem is out of wedlock children. And also, there's another problem we have. Is a lot of these women. I'm talking to these girls,
truthful.
Right? Hold on, let me finish. A lot of these girls and boys. They do not want to be under the authority of a man. They do not respect patriarchy. They're into matriarchy. We're up against that, too, okay? They don't think they need a man to raise a family. They don't want a man running shit. They want to run things, okay? That's what's going on here, and that's what a lot of men don't understand.
Well, since I'm the only lady on the panel, let me go here. Excuse me, every man is not worthy of a woman being submissive to. So first of all, a man needs to stand up and be a man before you ask a woman to follow him. So I totally disagree. There's a whole lot of brothers that don't deserve anybody to follow them. So before you go out and say that what we need to do is all follow suit and find a man to follow, you would be incorrect.
No, I didn't say that. I said patriarchy is dead. And what happening now in our society, we live in matriarchy, not patriarchy. I grew up in a patriarchy where males head of the household. Now it's different. A lot of women do not want to be in the control of a man. They want independence, which is okay. But the problem is they want to raise families under matriarchy. And a boy's, it doesn't, matriarchy is not good for men to be brought up in. It's very bad. It's dangerous for a boy to be raised up in matriarchy. It is very dangerous for a black man to be raised in a single-parent home. It's very, very dangerous.
I think
trust
everybody
me,
on the panel agrees with you. That's
okay.
What we said. How do we fix it? Because we can't go in.
Cut off the money, the support system. We got to cut off the support system. That's what's keeping it alive.
Is there anything else that we can do in addition to that, I think, would be the question. Is there,
no, that's
in addition
it. We
to
have
that,
to cut off
other,
the support system.
Okay.
Cut it off.
Okay.
Cut it off.
Okay.
So you think that's the
reason? I was just curious.
From our team, the fact that we need to cut off from the welfare system.
Not just that, cut off the school lunch program, cut off Section 8, all that stuff, man. We have to quit supporting matriarchy. That's what
okay,
we have
let me
to
go back to the phone line, 469-247. You're on Center Stage.
Hey, I called in earlier. It's me again. I agree. We should cut off Section 8 and WIC and all these other government assisted programs. School lunch, I can't see about school lunch because some people aren't financially able to pay for this overpriced school lunch. But I agree, it's like a cycle that's going on, and, you know, somebody's raised on Section 8, and, you know, she's just going to continue because somebody is a handout, and that's a problem that a lot of Americans are having, that we just take handouts and are okay with just taking handouts. And,
but
you know, that's a recurring issue.
It's interesting that y'all say cut it off. But what I'm not hearing, this is cool talking. I'm not hearing anybody saying, okay, once you cut it off, which I can see that. But there has to be something that's going to happen after that, which goes back to I think what AJ said, which is education.
No.
Wouldn't you have to educate them on what type of life or options are available for them to take the place of these situations if you're going
to
cut it off? Wouldn't you have
to
give them other options?
You're going
to
give them a job?
Add them to the homeless population.
No.
I agree
with
that.
Add them to the homeless population.
If we cut it off, what's going
to
happen?
They have to educate themselves.
Girls are going to have to start picking boys the way they did in the old days. That's how it's going to happen. You're going to have to start picking a guy. Look, can you support me? You want to marry me. You want some of this between my legs. You're going to have to marry me. And you got to prove that you can support me like they did in the old days, back in 1900, when 90% of black kids were born within a marriage, 1910. We're going to go back to the old days. Girls are going to stop getting with Pookie and Ray Ray and Dequan. They're going to start looking for brothers that have their shit together before they decide to have a baby with. It's going to be
required
girls
okay, wait a minute.
About
it's,
what
it's
they're
couple,
doing.
It's a couple things I need to address before we go too far.
We're going
to
go back to the phone lines, 214-450. You're on Center Stage.
Hey, I've been listening, and I spoke earlier. While I agree that we, you know, things like Section 8 and food stamps could be cut off, I do believe, I don't believe that's the only solution. I don't believe that's all that needs to happen. And then, you know, that, I don't think that's the root of the problem. I think that's one thing, because I do believe, I feel like that is an enabler that enables our, you know, youth to feel like, oh, well, you know, if I don't succeed, you know, I can just get on Section 8 and I'll have a place to stay. I can get on food stamps. I'll have some food. You know, it is an enabler, but it's not the only solution to get rid of it. I don't know the guy's name. I don't know your name, but it's education. Education is not just about school. It's not just about taking the kid to school, about learning math and reading. It's educating the child on life, on, you know, how to pay bills, how to manage money, how to, you know, be successful in you know, it's educating them on a deeper level than just the schoolhouse. And so education is a key factor to me. I agree with that. I think that lack of education is a question factor.
Back to the topic that we asked. If we do all of this, will this stop the violence in our community?
Hello.
Yeah.
It's called the totality.
It's called working together. We have to work in a totality. One instance is going to stop it all. We have to work in a totality.
We got to work all of this.
I don't think it's one.
If I take her off a free lunch, if I take her off a free lunch and don't let her have babies, will that stop the violence?
Yeah, slow down.
Because I live in Fort Worth, and for the last 3 weeks, every other day, for the last 3 weeks, we done had a shooting or a killing. Every other day. Every other day at the city of Fort Worth. And in 1993-94, Fort Worth led the nation in gang killing. In one summer, we had 75 young men killed in the city of Fort Worth, and that's how Organizational Mojo was born. But it goes back to what I believe as a mentor is knowledge of self and get an education to understand that we don't have to hurt each other, and let me get out of this and get to the next level, because in order for me to go to the next level, I got to love me, and I got to take care of me. The biggest thing that I try to do with our boys is I have a mirror in my classroom, and I tell them, you love the man in the mirror. And if we can do that, we can get to this next level.
But that's education.
Okay, we're going to try to open it one more time before we leave the air.
Education leads to hope, and the community without a hope is dead anyway.
Let me go to 469. One more caller before we leave the air. 469-463, you're on center stage.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to have a little comment about the violence situation. The situation is that we don't have that supporting factor anymore, like with the school system. We don't have the coaches in your life as much. We don't have the fathers in the life as much. And that is what is causing so much of the mob life mentality, where they're starting to gang up.
How old are you, brother?
I'm 29.
Okay. Well, the next time we do something like this, I'm going to do my best to find some youth to bring home so they can talk to us.
Yes.
The next time we do something like this, I'm going to go and sit in the Stop Six Project, and I'm going to bring some youth on so they can talk to us, because it's really different when we hear it from them. Because, like I said at the beginning of the conversation, here I got all these young brothers around me, and it's put back to education, because they said it, Mr. Muhammad, you showed us everything, but the choices.
Okay. We're down to our last 2 seconds. My guest, Dr. Maryam Mouton, Dr. Waleek Sabir, Mr. Johnny Muhammad, we'd like to say to you all, thank you so much for being part of the panel. You all added so much to the conversation. If you'd like to discuss a certain topic here on Center Stage, drop us a line via email. We'd like to hear from you. We'd like to know what you think of the show. You can reach us at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. On behalf of AJ Kundalini and myself, thanks to you, to everyone for joining in and being a part of the discussion. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Peace.